As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
So Leicester and Leeds have been relegated from the Premier League and will be playing in the second tier of English football next season. How did it come to this? How will both clubs deal with various off-pitch issues and look to bounce straight back? I'm Mark Chapman. This is the Athletic Football Podcast.
It is all over at Elland Road. And after a three-year stay back in the Premier League, Leeds are out of it once more.
Leicester City are down. Now the inquest will begin as to where the damage was done. Leicester are relegated.
We're joined today by two of our writers whose focus is on teams that have been relegated from the Premier League. The Athletic's Leeds writer, Phil Hay, and Rob Tanner, who covers Leicester City for us. We'll deal with what both clubs will do next, but let's look at why it got to this point at both clubs. And your piece, Rob, says that Leicester really never saw this coming.
They never factored in relegation battle at all. I mean, it's in the annual accounts every year that the goal is to challenge for European football every year. And I think that's the reason why they've put the brakes on the spending over the last couple of years, because of the new UEFA profit and sustainability regulations, which would limit them to 70% of their revenue in expenditure, and they were over 85 in the last account. So I think it's had a major impact. They've been, as I wrote this morning, they've been flying close to the sun, trying to chase this dream, and they've come crashing down to earth in a big way.
They're trying to chase this dream. I also wonder, and this is just an amateur theory here, right? I also wonder whether they're trying to chase that high that they got from certainly the league title success and the FA Cup success. They as an organisation would be no different to many athletes in a variety of sports that I've spoken to over many years. That getting back to the high of success can be very, very difficult.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to sustain it as well over a period of time. I mean, they have been able to sustain success. They've had five consecutive top 10 finishes before this relegation. And I know they are ambitious. And certainly the owner, Top Kuntop, you know, he wants his father's legacy to be protected in terms of success, continued success. So that's why they've been spending. I mean, the seventh highest wage bill in the Premier League, that's extraordinary for Leicester. Been in the Premier League less than a decade to get to that level. And yes, you're right. They wanted to go on and kick on after reaching the European semi-final. They wanted to qualify again and get to a final this time. And they're just overstretched, overreached. I mean, the training ground is a beacon of their ambition, £100 million. It's one of the best in Europe, let alone in the Premier League. And their plans...
People tell me that's a problem.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that one, yeah. But I certainly think they've lost something that's special moving to Seagrave. But the stadium project as well is enormous, what they're trying to do down there. The ambition has never been an issue. I mean, a lot of times when sides get relegated, the fans moan about a lack of ambition from their owners. It's the complete opposite of Leicester.
On to Leeds. When did this decline start?
Is a great question. I think more and more people look back to the summer of 2021 after they'd finished ninth in the division under Marcelo Bielsa, and ask the question whether there was enough recruitment in that summer window, and whether Leeds fell into the trap of that old saying of if you stand still, you move backwards in the Premier League. They did in that window place a huge amount of faith in the spine of the team, the core of the team that had got them out of the Championship and sustained them in that first season in the Premier League. But I think it's been quite apparent over the past 2 years that spine has diminished and weakened. And it still feels even now as they're going down that they're relying on players like Liam Cooper, Adam Forshaw, Luke Ayling, you know, even Patrick Bamford for all his fitness injuries. It's always turning back to those same old faces, even though 2 years on you would expect that you would have developed a different team and would have developed a different core, a new core and a fresher core. But there have been errors with the choice of head coach since Bielsa as well. I think particularly Jesse Marsh will go down as a fundamental mistake that has cost them heavily. And I look at Leeds as quite a textbook example of how to get relegated. You know, all the things that you need to get wrong in order to finish in the bottom three, they have done. All the problems that you need to finish in the bottom three, they have had. And I think the biggest one lies with ownership at the moment.
Just on Bielsa, are they struggling to de-Bielsify themselves? I can remember Ander Herrera, for example, at Manchester United, talking about how after Louis van Gaal left, to sort of get them out of the mindset of the van Gaal mentality as a group of players took some time. Now, Bielsa was amazing. They did amazing things for Leeds, but only Bielsa can do what Bielsa does. So moving on from him takes time.
I think it's more of a cultural thing with Bielsa as opposed to tactics. There did need to be a big swing away from the tactics of the man marking, the high pressing that Bielsa was famed for. And there was a big switch away from that with Marsh. And I think one of the criticisms is that Bielsa to Marsh now looks far more like a clunking change of gear than a kind of smooth or natural transition. But when I say it's cultural, I think the thing that they've struggled to do is to move on from him in a way where people are satisfied with what's happening post-Bielsa. I think a lot of people could see that it wasn't going well for him in his final season and it was going particularly badly at the point where he was sacked. But essentially, virtually every decision since then has been wrong. You know, it hasn't worked with Marsh. Neither Gracia nor Sam Allardyce were able to make a significant difference to the results, although they were both, you know, fairly late throws of the dice, and Allardyce in particular. But recruitment as well, none of it is clicked and none of it is paid off. And the problem you have at Leeds is that the high under Bielsa was so intoxicating and so extreme that people are left with those memories. And compared to that now, it feels completely different and it feels like a club in disarray. You've completely lost the way and completely lost all direction. So I think, yes, you know, moving on from the Bielsa era has been a massive challenge for them. But I think that's been because of the failure to deliver anything comparable as opposed to a tactical issue latterly.
Are there similarities with Brendan Rodgers there then, Rob, do you think? I mean, that goes back to the point we were saying about the highs and Phil mentioned there, the highs of Bielsa. Are there similarities with moving on from Rodgers?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I did a piece a few weeks ago where we looked at whether the players actually cared, and what we came to the conclusion was is they do care. But what happens is when you're used to playing a certain style of football over a period of time, and it's been 4 years under Brendan Rodgers, they've been playing Rodgers ball. When things start to go wrong in games, when you're trying to change that system or change that way of play, you revert to type. Doubt creeps in. And you think, well, I know what I'm supposed to do here because I've been doing it for 4 years, and you go back to doing what you were doing before. And I think that certainly was the case when Dean Smith come in, because they got that little bit of a bounce to start with. We saw a difference. There was a more direct style of play. But then they went to Fulham and it all went pear-shaped very early on. And they were doing the same things we'd been seeing them do all season under Brendan Rodgers, you know, losing the ball in key areas, leaving the centre-backs so totally exposed. It was just, they just reverted to type. And I think that was, they couldn't get themselves out of that mindset.
I think in the end, you end up with a squad which is built for nobody. So when Bielsa moved on, the squad had been kind of modelled for him, and whether it was strong enough or not, and clearly it wasn't in the end, it was his team. And then they recruited for Jesse Marsh, very specific style of play that he used. Then Marsh goes, Javi Gracia comes in, whose style is really nothing like Marsh's and not a great deal like Bielsa's either. And then you end up with Sam Allardyce for four games, whose style is quite honestly, his own. And I think you saw that yesterday. So in the end, the squad isn't really built for anybody. You know, it's not perfectly designed for anyone who's trying to make a go of it. And that, I think, more than anything else, is how you get relegated.
But the other similarity there, when we look at squads and squad building, is that both clubs, for whatever reason, have lost really big, important players over the years. Now, Rob, from a Leicester point of view, that was kind of part of the business model, wasn't it? You know, one big player can go every summer, every other summer or whatever, and if that brings in 60, 70, 80 million pounds, then that's great. But it's a warning for all clubs, probably up to about sixth in the Premier League. We should include Brighton in this, that maybe there are only so many times that you can allow the big one to leave before you don't strike lucky with the replacement.
Exactly. You've got to get your recruitment spot on every single time you do that. And you're right, it has been the model for Leicester, and they've reinforced that in their latest accounts as well. The message is that they're going to return to that model. 2 years ago, because of COVID, they didn't sell an asset because they thought the market was deflated and they weren't going to get value for money for that asset, and that probably would have been a James Maddison. So they didn't, and they still spent £55 million on players that have had very little impact. Yannick Vestergaard, for example, £15 million on him, Patson Daka and Boubacari Soumaré. And they brought in Ryan Bertrand. The recruitment model went out the window. And they've paid the price for that now because the squad has been much weaker. But before, they did reinvest it quite wisely in certain players. They went for talent like Youri Tielemans and Wesley Fofana. They found players that other clubs may have been aware of but weren't prepared to go in for them. But over the last few years, the recruitment has been a major issue for them, and it's led to the financial issues they've had as well, because now they've only got a couple of assets left which they can cash in on.
For maybe slightly different reasons, Bill, ditto Leeds. I mean, you cannot forget that they lost two of their most, if not the two most influential players last summer.
They did, and it's almost, I mean, it's a broader point, but it's almost a mark of the Premier League that Manchester City paid £43 million for Calvin Phillips and quite honestly don't seem to need him. You know, it doesn't seem to have a role there. It doesn't seem to be making any impact or really be necessary in the grand plan. In those circumstances, what matters is how you spend the money and how you reinvest it. And like similar to Rob's comments about Leicester, Leeds have not struck gold in enough areas with the money that they've spent on individuals. They've had the odd success story, but actually the recruitment this season has been a major, major failure. And director of football, Victor Orta, left around about a month ago. He left ultimately because there was a disagreement over whether or not Gracia should stay to the end of the season. Orta thought he should. The board thought there was a change needed. But there was still a clamour on the outside for Orta to go among the fan base because the recruitment had not allowed Leeds to build from a really high watermark of ninth in the Premier League. Even to, you know, nobody was expecting that position to be sustained, but to build into competent mid-table side. They just seem to be going backwards. And I mean, I think there's a lot more to say about, you know, the four games under Allardyce than purely recruitment. And you can't pin it to him, but the four games have not been good. But he said himself yesterday, you know, after the game, recruitment is everything, and recruitment is really what it all comes down to. Because, you know, to use his words, if you've got very good or great players, they know what they're doing. They get it right more often than not, and they are far easier to coach than substandard footballers.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Just on the two men that came in, and we'll come on to the futures next, but I can't work out, Phil, with Allardyce, whether he just tried every kind of psychological trick in the book or whether he basically thought the players were crap. And I find that really hard, because if Leeds had stayed up, it would have all been down to Allardyce. That's how it would have been spun. Now they've gone down, it's basically because the players are rubbish. I can't work out whether he's just using psychological tricks or whether it actually makes feel a bit uncomfortable.
I think there was a little bit of both. And I did ask him yesterday, did you actually think when you came in that you could do this? Because one thing that this has comprehensively done at Leeds is proven that trying to spin the wheel one last time with a head coach when you've got four games left is a totally flawed strategy. And if you're in that position, you're most likely going down anyway. He wasn't totally scathing, but he did say that once he got in and he started to become properly, because he didn't have a lot of time before he was appointed. So, you know, became properly aware of injuries and what was in the dressing room, his perspective on it changed. But you mentioned trying every trick in the book. You know, last week he had Eddie Gray and Gary McAllister, club's ex-players. Eddie Gray, best of the best, you know, at Leeds, up at the training ground to speak to the players. He had Gordon Strachan in on Friday. He had the players training at Elland Road for 3 days. As somebody put it to me, it felt a little bit like playing the greatest hits on the way to relegation. You know, the kind of last tricks in the book, the psychological plays of let's go and train at the stadium and see if it makes a difference. But in the end, you have players like Liam Cooper, Luke Ayling, who've been there for the best part of a decade and know the ground inside out. And then in the end, you pick a team with six defenders in it and you concede after 1 minute. There is just no coherence to the, you know, the plan or the strategy at all. And it looks as desperate as it was.
Dean Smith, it felt, brought more strategy. Would that be fair? I mean, for example, playing for a point at Newcastle, which nearly worked for them.
Yeah, I think the big thing though was to lift the mood. And we mentioned the training ground earlier on. That there was, when they were at Beaver Drive, there used to be a real camaraderie of close knit sort of feeling around the place. It's very compact, and in the canteen, everybody used to eat together. The first team, the under 23s, the 18, the staff, even the chef would come round after service and sit and eat his meal with whoever was left in there. And you'd have Alan Birchnell, the club ambassador, taking the mickey out of the players as they walked into the building. And there was a us against the world type feel there under Nigel Pearson when they were there. At Seagrave, the first team players sit in the restaurant in their own little section. Everybody else eats in another section. There's a disconnect.
Who the hell came up with that as an idea? I mean, that...
Well,
that,
yeah.
I mean, what?
It's so grand. It is like being in an airport terminal. It is enormous. So in the middle of the restaurant, down the centre, there's like a service area where the buffets are and things like that. And on one side is under 23s, under 18s. On the other side, first team. Now, Brenda tried to change it a little bit and tried to stop the players from being spoilt to an extent by making them take their plates back up. So there was no table service. You got rid of table service. But they're very much disconnected. And there was people spread out all over this complex. And it sucked that sort of camaraderie, that special feel about Leicester, that bubble that they used to have at Beaver Drive away. Now, I might be over-egging the pudding in terms of how much of an impact that actually had, but it was notable that when Dean Smith went in, the first thing he said he needed to do was put smiles on people's faces, make them believe again. He could see there was a lack of belief in the squad, and he just wanted to lift the place. Craig Shakespeare come back, and obviously he remembers what it was like at Beaver Drive, and you know, his role was to get around the players and get them smiling again and get them enjoying training, get them enjoying what they're doing. John Terry also. So that was a big thing, as much as the strategy in the games. It was trying to lift the mood and change the mentality.
So when we move on to what's next, by the way, I love Phil looking as shocked as me at table service for players in a training ground. Good grief.
Do you think that's a good example of the way, and I think this has definitely been the case at Leeds, of the way in which clubs get distracted by the idea of what the kind of grand ideas they have are going to deliver in the future while neglecting the short term? And I always had this feeling at Leeds, and more so now, that they were looking at, say, the players they signed, the squad they're building, and thinking, in 4 or 5 years' time, you are all going to see how great this is and what an incredible team this is going to develop into. But actually, what's happened is they've been relegated. Most of these players will move on and leave. And actually, there will be no legacy from this at all. And it feels the same with the training ground. You know, we build the training ground like that and we give the players table service. This is what it will develop further down the line. But it doesn't, does it? Leicester likewise have been relegated with this training ground that they probably just don't need in that division. It's just, it strikes me as strange.
Well, it also strikes me as completely misinterpreting what elite means. I mean, you can have an elite complex without it pampering people or making them feel like they're different to anybody else within the organization. And look, you know, Manchester City are a very easy example to throw into this, but I don't think it's any coincidence that when they do their trophy presentations, there's about 120 staff lining the guard of honour for the players to pick their medals.
I think with Leicester, ever since they got into the Premier League, they've looked at the Big Six and they've tried to copy them and tried to take little bits from what they've seen and try to adopt them to their own model. They've done that throughout, and I think the training ground was for them to supposedly become an elite club themselves, the best of the rest, close the gap on the Big Six, even though they're a moving target and they're getting further and further away. And I think that was the plan on the training ground. And also the training ground was designed to give the players no excuse for failure. Everything they could possibly want is there. There's no excuses if they don't perform. But then if you go too far, then they can become too comfortable. Beaver Drive wasn't comfortable. So, you know, you drove in through the gates through a housing estate. You know, you weren't out in rural Leicestershire, miles away from everybody. It will become an asset. It will be an asset in the future, but they've got to grow into it.
There's a balance, Rob, isn't there? I mean, you know, have the best plunge pool in the world. I mean, I'm no expert in sports, but have the best plunge pool in the world. That helps your players recover more, but don't have some 19-year-old kid from Leicester with wearing white gloves serving them their tea.
I appreciate that you almost can't win either way. If you have a really run-down or old-fashioned training ground, people wonder about it and say that you're backwards and a long way behind the times. But I guess, like you say, there's a balance to strike. The irony here is that for quite a while, Leicester used to be touted as the model that Leeds wanted to emulate and to copy, and they absolutely have in one respect. But, you know, the idea of selling players for big money, if you can, selling your best players, reinvesting, building up, you know, pushing up the league was what Leeds wanted to do. And they saw Leicester as the kind of image to copy in that respect, although not so much anymore, I don't think.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let me ask you then both, what next? For both clubs, have Southampton stolen a march on Leeds and Leicester in the way that they actually reset their club last summer?
Great question. And also, is it beneficial to go down 3 or 4 weeks earlier than right at the very death? Because they already seem to have got Russell Martin in line as head coach. They're making big changes at the top of the club. The difference they have anyway is that they don't look like they're going through a transition of ownership, which Leeds, you know, that is the key burning issue for Leeds at the moment, is whether or not, I mean, the previous deal between 49ers Enterprises and the current owner, Andrea Rabrazzani, no longer exists because they've been relegated. That becomes void. The 49ers Enterprises do still want to buy the club. And you would assume that on both sides, if that is going to happen or if it isn't going to happen, the decision on that needs to be made very, very rapidly because they have no head coach now. I can't honestly believe that they will go for Allardyce. They have no director of football. They need a change there, either another specific director of football or a kind of broader framework of recruitment. And there will be a massive churn in the squad as well. So they have a huge amount to do. And you do suspect that Southampton at this particular moment are better placed because of the preparation they've been able to do.
Leicester, they've got a massive amount of work to do. The identity of the manager is so important now. What's their identity going to be? That squad is going to have a massive overhaul. The seven lads that are out of contract, over £100 million worth of investment in players, all walking out the door for nothing now. There's another eight, including Vardy and Maddison in the last year. I can imagine Maddison and Harvey Barnes will both be sold as well to finance the rebuild. I don't think there'll be a change of hierarchy, and I don't think there'll be a change of ambition. They're pressing ahead with the stadium plans and all the other facilities that they're going to build to increase their revenue. And they'll push the return instantly, but they've got a lot of work to do in a short space of time.
What happens with Dean Smith?
Well, he's having talks with Top in the next couple of days. I think they'll try and start afresh with a new man. But you never know. If he charms Top, he can be persuaded.
With both clubs and the manager search, they are in a bum fight now. And both clubs will rightly think that they're attractive, that they're an attractive proposition. Both fan bases will think that they are a big club, quite rightly, and they will be able to get someone that they want. But they're in a very competitive pool, and other clubs who have interim Palace, for example, will have a march on them because they offer Premier League football. So there will be a bum fight here, won't there?
Absolutely. I mean, Martin Glover, the head of recruitment at Leicester, he would have been drawing up transfer targets because they know that the squad rebuild was coming regardless of what division they're in. But all those targets now, a lot of them will be untouchable, unreachable. So it's got to be a complete rechange of thinking.
The danger for Leeds right now is that what they're able to sell themselves on is name, really. In the absence of clear ownership structure and no director of football, and I guess absence of picture of exactly what the squad will look like at the start of next season, you are asking coaches to take a bit of a leap of faith. I mean, there was contact about 2 or 3 weeks ago between 49ers Enterprises and Bielsa about the possibility of whether he might be an option if they went down, but he took the Uruguay job and that boat has sailed again. I wouldn't be surprised if Brendan Rodgers comes into the frame as well. I think he is exactly the sort of manager they very much like to take, and people like Carlos Corberan as well, who's really well known to Leeds. But I wonder, in these circumstances, how do you sell the job to them? You know, you would be asking them to place quite a lot of faith in your ability to sort out the key issues that need to be sorted out. And at Leeds, there are plenty of them. So I think when you getting relegated in these circumstances, you do potentially have the money to have a good crack at promotion next season. But I don't think anybody would see it as guaranteed. And I don't think anybody would be complacent about it.
The coming straight back looks harder and harder, to be honest with you. I mean, look, Watford and Norwich, for various reasons, have not come straight back up this time. But you just take a look at that. I mean, you take a look at that championship route, and there are some ambitious, well-run, big clubs in there that you would automatically think, well, they're going to be there. But then there are also those you've just missed out this time that you think, well, if nothing changes and they keep going on their certain trajectory, Millwall are a good example, Blackburn are another example, then to just automatically assume, Rob, that you're a big club and you drop down, I'm not saying neither of you do, but a big club and you drop down to the Championship and you'll come back, well, there are plenty of former Premier League clubs you can talk to who still haven't come back.
I think there's got to be a level of humility at Leicester. I mean, this is a humbling experience. They thought they were well established. As I said, they didn't see it coming. They thought they were well established and they were pushing to close the gap on the big six. Now they find themselves in the Championship. So they've got to take stock of that. And I think it's got to be a change of mindset now. They've got to understand that there's some big clubs in there. We've seen Stoke, thought they were established in the Premier League for a number of years. They're in there. They've struggled to come back up. So they've got to get these decisions right now. It's such an important summer. I think it's the most important summer I can remember covering Leicester. Because it could go one way or the other.
I've seen many, many times at Leeds as well that they do not fly under the radar in the Championship. I mean, how best to put this apart from to say that they're not generally anybody's second club, Leeds. And it is difficult game after difficult game. It is anyway in that division, but without any doubt, Leeds get targeted a little more. Everything will rest on recruitment. It will rest on not just the quality of the players that you sign, but also the kind of mental calibre of them. And likewise, a coach, I think they probably will need somebody who has done it before at that level. I think that was one of the reasons why they were sort of mildly tempted by Bielsa, because it had happened for him, even though he came into the division with no experience of it specifically. You know, he blew it away in his second season. I think it's probably why somebody like Rodgers would suit them quite nicely as well, because it promises to be a really hard year. And as everybody knows, the thing about parachute payments is they don't last forever. So you do need to get this done quickly before you start straining into that horrible EFL hinterland where you just get stuck forever.
We will leave it there. Thank you both.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.